HaMelech talks about, when he talks about, there's a pasuk in Mishlei that talks about insincere donors, people who pledge tzedakah and don't give it. So it says, there's so much wind and so much clouds, but where's the rain? Be'ezras Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is someone who does keep his promises. Yes, there's a pasuk in Mishlei that says, talks about donors who pledge charity and don't keep their promise. So it says, there's so much wind and so much clouds, but where's the rain? But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Eino Kein, when there's wind and when there's clouds, there will be rain, so that's a good thing for particularly in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, people ask, again, learning a Sefer of Nach inside is extremely difficult. I will try to do it, and let me tell you this. Today I'm going to speak outside because I have some. I'm still doing introductory. Okay. Some days just can't win. I don't know what it is. Okay. I thought the extra hour of sleep would... Okay. Yeah, the thing is that today I'm going to still continue with introductory remarks and show you some aspects of the Vilna Gaon's commentary, but I do hope in the coming weeks to actually just read some verses inside so you can see the lashon. So everybody should have a Sefer Mishlei. It doesn't make a difference what Parish you have, or English or Hebrew, but just have a book of Mishlei. If you are extremely courageous, you could actually try to look at the commentary of the Vilna Gaon yourself, but I warn you, it is very, very difficult. It is difficult for me. It is not an easy commentary. But as I say, as long as you have a Mishlei with Psukim, that will be okay. Now, as we said last week, the Vilna Gaon divides Mishlei into three natural divisions. And division one is Perek Aleph through Perek Tes. That is division one, and that is basically about the importance of midos and wisdom in a very general way. So let me give you a little bit of a heads up as to what psukim we will be discussing in this class. I'll give you the first three prukim, just so you'll be aware. Now, you are allowed to read psukim that are not assigned. No one's going to penalize you for reading extra psukim. But what we're going to look at in the shir is we will look at all of Perek Aleph. And then in Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud to Pasuk Chaf Beis, 10 to 22. And Perek Gimel, Pasuk Aleph to Pasuk Yud Ches. Right? So that's what I'll give you right now because that'll take quite a few weeks to cover. Okay? So again, all of Perek Aleph because that's introductory to the book and that's important. In Perek Beis, we will be looking at Perek Pasuk Yud to Pasuk Chaf Beis, and Perek Gimel will be Pasuk Aleph to Pasuk Yud Ches. But the reason why that's so long is it's a very long mashal. It's a whole story about a man having an affair, etc. So you need to read the entire story. Okay, as I say, other psukim, by all means, for sure, read, but we will not necessarily be going over them in the shir. Okay? And again, I have further assignments, but we'll wait. I'll give you a little bit at a time, and then, we'll add as we go on. Okay, and this is only the first book of Shlei, which is Perek Aleph to Perek Tes. Okay, but for today, I do want to continue with a few examples of the great, great depth and ingenuity of the Vilna Gaon's commentary, so I'm going to take some psukim at random, just to show you how he interprets them, and really to show you, number one, what the pasuk would mean before we get to the Vilna Gaon, and then what the pasuk now means with his commentary, because you always have to compare the simple pshat with what the Vilna Gaon is adding. Now, sometimes, by the way, he basically gives you the simple pshat, meaning the Vilna Gaon did not feel achra'i to always give you something novel. Sometimes he will state, the pasuk means what it says. Nothing wrong with that. With the Brisker Rav, when people would sometimes want to be mefalpo, they would ask a kasha, and they would give a teretz, and then they would want to give another teretz. The Brisker Rav said, if your first teretz is good, why do you want to give a second teretz? I mean, you don't always have to look for novelty for the sake of novelty. The first passage I want to share with you is not so much a chiddush in pshat, but it's just an observation that the Vilna Gaon makes. This is a pasuk in Perek Dalet, pasuk Yud Gimel, Perek Dalet 4, verse 13. And the pasuk seems to be, I don't want to say a run-of-the-mill pasuk, but a pasuk that is not exceptional in its novelty. And the pasuk says, Hachazek b'musar. Remember, this part of Mishle, if I didn't say it before, you'll notice, is a father speaking to a son. There's a constant reference to Bini, to Musar Avicha, the Musar of your father, the Torah of your mother, etc. So the basic structure of the first nine prakim, which is not always true for the rest of the book, is the loving message that a parent gives to a child. That's why there's this constant reference of speaking to your child. Now we know, of course, that this is not literal. It doesn't only refer to a parent and a child. We know that a Rebbe or a teacher of Torah is considered to be a parent as well, and that is how one should relate. But in one of the messages of the parent to the son, to the child, it's Lav Davka's son, Hachazek b'musar. Hachazek, grab on to Musar. Now Musar here is not a reference to any particular movement, but Musar is the avoda of self-improvement, of working on yourself. Don't take things for granted. There is a constant challenge in life to try to refine our midos. And when we think we've made it, we fall into the trap of arrogance. And that means even the things we accomplish, we can lose. It's a little disheartening in some ways. You have to work on a marriage constantly. You have to work on being a parent constantly. You have to work on living in Eretz Yisrael constantly. You know, when Chazal say Eretz Yisrael is acquired through Yisurin, through suffering, that doesn't mean it ends at some point and there's smooth sailing. Every time we get too confident, the Kadosh Baruch Hu shows us there are more shocks in the system. Let me digress for a moment. You know, on Yom Kippur, in the morning, we read the sections of Parshas Acharei Mos that talk about the Yom Kippur service. The Kohen Gadol goes into the Kodesh HaKodashim. Obviously, that's the most sensible reading for Yom Kippur. But in Mincha of Yom Kippur, do you know what we read? We read, now it actually follows after the Kohen Gadol goes into the Kodesh HaKodashim, we read about the Parsha of Giloy Arayos. Don't commit adultery, don't commit incest, don't commit homosexuality, don't be an animal. And in many, many ways, that's almost insulting. I spend most of the day already fasting, tefillah. You know, we become kind of holy. So I have to hear statements about don't be with an animal? I mean, aren't I beyond that? Now, some Mefarshim say, well, it's not so much the animal, but the reason why Arayos generally is mentioned is because women did come to show on Yom Kippur more than any other day. So perhaps the Yetzer Hara of a man might be stimulated, so he needs to be given the warning. And you know, the truth of the matter is, in many modern, I don't know if it's true today so much, but in the 40s and 50s, in the modern Orthodox synagogues in the United States, Kol Nidre night was the fanciest night of the year. That's when women would come with their fall wardrobes. And I've seen descriptions of this. They would wear, you know, in those days you could wear a mink coat. It was politically, they didn't have political correctness in those days. And people would be looking at the fashion. So indeed, what the Achronim said is, be careful, don't be enticed on Yom Kippur. You know, perhaps made some real sense. But I would suggest another interpretation. And that is, the reading of the Arayas is really a reminder to never feel we've arrived. A person might think, I've become righteous. I've become holy. The baser sins that attract other people, they don't apply to me. I'm only functioning on the highest level of holiness. Nope. You never get past even falling into the worst of eros. What do Chazal say? Al tamin biyatzmecha ad yom mosecha. Do not believe in yourself. Now, we don't mean in a negative sense. Actually, you're supposed to believe in yourself in the sense of my ability, our ability to grow. But don't take things for granted until the day of death. Yochanan was a Kohen Gadol, the Gemara says, for 80 years. And at the very end of his life, he might have been 100, we don't know how old he was when he became Kohen Gadol. He became a Tzduki, he became a Sadducee. He rejected the Torah Shebal Peh. He was over 100. So, in many, many ways, this is the message of this pasuk. Hachzek b'musar. Hold on to the need for self-improvement your whole life. Al teref, never let it go. Never take it for granted. Ki hi chayecha. That is your life. This is the pasuk in Mishlei. So I just want to read to you a quote from the Vilna Gaon. Again, it is not a radical reinterpretation of the pasuk, but there's a famous quote that one might even memorize verbatim, and the Vilna Gaon's language is, "Ma sha'adam chai, that which a person is alive." Why does Hashem give a person life? Kedei lishbor hamida. Shaloi shavar ad heina, that he should break the bad midah that he has not yet managed to break. God gives us life so we will rectify the negative character traits that we have. Ulachein tzarich tamid lehischazek. And that is why a person must always strengthen himself in Musar. V'yimlo yischazek, because if he does not strengthen himself, lama lo chayim, why does he live at all? There is no purpose. Now, this is amazing. The Vilna Gaon was no slouch when it came to Torah learning. I mean, I'm saying it facetiously. The Vilna Gaon, for most of his life, learned 22 hours. He only slept 2 hours, and of those 2 hours, he never slept more than a half an hour at a time. He took 4 half an hour naps. I think I told you the story that one time he slept 31 minutes, and he was mamish, b'tsar gadol, and he lost a minute. He was traveling, went to a chasna, he overslept, and he said, "Oy, this city is a sleepy city." And it wasn't until 25 years later when he came back for another chasna. He only slept 29 minutes. And he says, Baruch Hashem. And I got back my minute. And it is said the whole city was sabrachim the first time. And they rejoiced the second time. I think I told you, people used to, when the Vilna Gaon would travel, which was not that often, people would actually climb up on a window to look into the bedroom to see him sleeping or whatever it is. And they would actually charge, you know, whatever it is, a kopeck for 5 minutes or whatever it is. So the Vilna Gaon could have said, the purpose of life is to learn Torah. The purpose of life is to do mitzvos. He doesn't say that. The purpose of life is to perfect our midos. And the Torah and the mitzvos are the mechanisms, among other mechanisms, that help us perfect our character. But if one is not misaken midos, lama lo chayim. Now again, this is not a chiddush in terms of the pasuk. This is just making a thing. The pasuk says, hold on to Musar and don't let go because it is your life. The Vilna Gaon says, quite literally, that is why we have life. To work on our midos. And it's well known that Rav Yisrael Salanter said, who's the founder of the Musar movement. Again, the Vilna Gaon was before him. And the Vilna Gaon is the, if I could use the phrase, the godfather of the Musar movement. But the actual founder of this organized movement was Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. And there's a shalshelet, there is a chain from the Vilna Gaon to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. The Vilna Gaon's Talmid Muvak was Rav Chaim of Volozhin. Rav Chaim of Volozhin had many, many Talmidim because he founded the world famous Volozhiner Yeshiva. And one of his Talmidim was a person who was a hidden tzaddik. He was not so well known. He was a hidden tzaddik. He was not a Rosh Hashiva. He was not a Rav. Rav Zundel of Salant. He was not a Rav. He was a peddler. But Rav Yisrael Salanter, as a young boy, had a hint, had a feeling
that Rav Zundel was more than he was showing. And he used to follow him around and spy on him. He would see the chesed that he would do when nobody was looking, the Torah that he would learn when nobody was looking. Rav Zundel was a spy. He was an 11 or 12 year old boy following around Rav Zundel. And Rav Zundel once caught him in the act. And Rav Zundel told him, Yisrael, if you want to serve Hashem, you must learn Musar, work on your midos. And that one sentence inspired Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who started a whole program of working on midos and the like. So there are two things that inspired Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, so says the legend. One was that brief comment of Rav Zundel. And the other is also a very, very famous story that he was once walking in Vilna. And it was towards sunset. The sun was going down. And there was no electricity in those days. And he sees a shoemaker. I'm sure you've heard this. A very famous story. He sees a shoemaker who's stitching leather by the fading light of a candle. And it's getting dark. And he says to the shoemaker, he says, how could you work under these conditions? You can't see anything. And the shoemaker said, as long as the candle is burning, there is work that can be done. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter thought of the pasuk in Mishlei, Ner Hashem Nishmat Adam, a person's soul is a candle of God. As long as the candle is burning, there's work that can be done. I think it's become even a modern Hebrew expression, even in the Chiloni community, Kol Zman Shaner Dolek, Efshar Lavod, or something like that. They turned it, but it was originally said in Yiddish, obviously. And those were the inspirations. So it's so interesting that of all of the people who was Machshiv Torah learning, the Vilna Gaon says the purpose of life is Tikkun Hamidos. And in the language of Tikkun Hamidos, he says to break the bad Midos that we have. However, I do want to point out that in Mishlei generally, and in the Graz commentary in particular, there is often text and countertext, meaning to say, in Mishlei there will often be contradictions, because they're emphasizing different perspectives of reality. One example is, one pasuk says, do not rebuke the fool, because he will not listen. And the other pasuk says, rebuke the fool, because he's foolish. And the answer is, there are two types of fools. There's a fool who might listen, if you're correct, right? In other words, yesh v'yesh, right? Sometimes the lesson is just keep quiet, don't get involved. And sometimes your involvement can be constructive and helpful. And Shlomo HaMelech points it out by giving you two contradictory verses. So here too, there's a contradiction. On one hand, Hachazek b'Musar is the call to all of us that we have to break the bad midos that we have. Break them. Change them. How you change them is not under discussion right now. That's another discussion. How you change them gradually, suddenly, do you go to the extreme or go to the middle? We'll talk about those things. But I want to show you another pasuk, which is very, very famous. I know you've learned it many times, and I myself have spoke about it many times. This is all the way in the third book of the second book of Mishlei, Perek Chaf Aleph. And one of the most famous psukim in Tanakh. Where is it? Chanoch l'nar al pi darko. Perek Chaf Beis. Perek Chaf Beis, Pasuk Vav. 22:6. Chanoch lenar al pi darko. Educate a young one according to his pathway. Gam ki yaskin. So even when he becomes old, lo yasur mimena, he will not turn away. The Vilna Gaon explains, and again, this pshat is so well known that people think this is the standard explanation. In fact, it's not. This is a chiddush of the Vilna Gaon. That every child and every personality has their own unique way of perceiving reality and serving God. And the goal of character development and education is not to change a person, but to teach them how to take their talents and abilities and channel them in a positive and constructive way. And the Vilna Gaon quotes the Gemara in Masechus Shabbos that talks about the fact that our personalities are established to some degree by the constellations that we're born under. So if you're born under the red planet, Mars, you will be a shedder of blood. You will have a bloodlust. But you can choose to be a mohel, or a shochet, or a murderer. Now, when people look at these Gemaras, the first thing that might hit their head is, oh, astrology, how primitive. But you know, that really misses the boat totally, because it really makes no difference if astrology is true or it's not true. That's a machlokas, the Rambam said it's not true. But what the Gemara is talking about, the fact is that certain aspects of our personality are set. We're hardwired. Now, Chazal used the lashon of mazel. We can use the lashon of DNA. It really makes no difference. Genetically, we're born a certain way. And what it is that makes us that way is really not, that's really not the point. But the point that Chazal are making is a very significant point. And the very significant point is, if I have a child born under the mazel of Mars, my job is not to give him blood aversion. My job is to take his love of blood and direct it and turn it in the proper direction. So this seems to be a bit of a gloss on the notion of breaking a midah. That breaking a midah is not so much a matter of disregarding your essential personality as it is learning to take your personality or your child's personality and direct it in a good and constructive way. So if a child has difficulty, for example, sitting still, your goal here is not to say you are going to sit in the Shabbos table for the next 5 hours and not move a muscle. And this is what the Vilna Gaon says. If you train a child according to his personality, then even when he's old, he will have that chinuch. But if you train him not in accordance with his personality, so maybe when he's young, he's going to listen to you because he's afraid of getting hurt. But when he's out of the house, he's going to do his own thing. That's what the pasuk is saying. If you want a chinuch that will last when you're no longer the boss, the chinuch has to be, of course today, even today, that doesn't even work even when you are the so-called boss because you're not the boss. But anyway, okay. But even in the old times when parents used to have more control and shlita, once the kid is away from you, he will revert back to form unless there was a chinuch that taught him in accordance with his essential personality. So this is a very, very important klal and a very, very important yesod. Now some people have said that the fundamental problem with chinuch bizman hazeh is that people read the pasuk like a glitziana reads the pasuk. Now glitziana is, instead of saying darko, they say darki, like elokeinu, they say elokeini. So chanoch lenar al pi darki. Educate my child according to my derech. When in fact it has to be LP Darko. Now it's interesting that the Gemara tells us that in the time of the Second Temple there was a Kohen Gadol, Yehoshua ben Gamla, towards the end of the Second Bais. And Yehoshua ben Gamla is credited as doing a tremendous thing. And that is, he is the person who instituted the obligation for every community to have a yeshiva for its children, a cheder. Until his time, Vishinantam Levanecha. Parents were teaching their children. That's the optimal situation. But in his time, he saw many children were orphans. They didn't have parents. They wandered the street. Sometimes parents were not capable of teaching their children, either temperamentally, or they lacked the knowledge or the time. So he made a takana that there has to be schools And it's Zochor Latov. In fact, it's very interesting. I mean, in the ancient world, the Jewish people were the first nation in history that created a compulsory system of publicly funded education. I mean, it was Torah learning, but it was publicly funded education. Parents didn't pay tuition. It was a community. In fact, people are talking about going back to this. This was a tax, just like Lahavdil, let's say in the United States, right? You pay property taxes for public education, even if you have no children, or even if all your kids are in yeshiva. Same thing. Everybody paid for the upkeep of the chadorim, even if they had no children or their children were beyond it. It was a chiyuv of Klal Yisrael. And the Gemara says, Zachor Latov. He is remembered for good, because this was such a wonderful thing. But what's fascinating is, you see from the Gemara, as wonderful and as necessary as it was a second best choice. The best would have been parent teaching child, because that would have been Chanoch Lenar Al Pi Darko. I remember many years ago, when I taught for a while in Champaign-Urbana, which is 200 miles south of Chicago, and I would commute for 2 days a week, and then I would go back to Chicago. Champaign-Urbana then, now it's a little better actually, but then it really had no Orthodox community at all. There were only two frum families in Champaign, the Jacobson, who now live in my old community in Silver Spring, Jacobson and Rheingold. And so, I used to stay over the night that I was there, I would stay over, one or the other. It's interesting, one was great Milcha cook, one was great Fleischer cook, so I varied my routine. Although it's interesting, one only had girls and one only had boys, so for some reason the quantity of food was much greater in the boys' house, so, okay. The girls was more, okay, anyway. So the thing was, one of the things that I noticed was, the kids had to go to public school because there were no yeshivas at all. But every night, the father would take 2 hours to learn with his children. And although I would never give a person an etza, you know, to go to a place without a yeshiva, etc., without a religious community, but there was something very beautiful and very moving about a parent taking the achrayas to be mechanech their children. And Baruch Hashem, all the kids became religious. One is a rabbi, you know, etc. You know, it's really so it's an interesting thing. And this is because of Chanoch Lenar Al Pi Darko. So the point is, on one hand, we read. Why am I bringing this up? On one hand, we read the idea of breaking your midah, and on the other hand, we read the idea of not really breaking your midah, but taking your midah and channeling it in a very good way. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky once said that modern educational systems are like the beds in Sodom, right? This week we're going to be reading about Sodom. That Sodom also had a hotel, okay? And the hotels in Sodom had the Procrustean bed. One size fit all. If your legs were too short, cut it off. If your legs are too big, I'm sorry, legs are too big, we cut it off. Legs are too short, we stretch you to the breaking point. You got to fit the mold. Now again, our mechanchim, by and large, are very, very devoted. And chas v'shalom, to say anything negative, in a way, it becomes impossible when you have a class of 20, 30, whatever it would be. How can you tailor everything to every individual? It becomes almost an impossibility. People do the best they can. But what shayach chanoch lenar al pi darko? And people learn differently. You know, I've noticed that. I remember when I was a child. I noticed that there were, you know, students, let's say, who simply didn't understand certain things, but for other things, which other people didn't understand, they understood right away. So, for example, I'll give you a concrete example. If we were to analyze the different styles of thinking, so the gold standard of thinking in Chinuch, we'll call the, for boys, let's say, is the analytical Gemara mind, the person who just follows the analysis. In fact, that's the gold standard. But you know, the highly analytical minds may have difficulty in spatial perception. So when the Gemara or the Chumash discusses three-dimensional structures like the Mishkan, they don't grasp it. They grasp analysis and logic, but they don't grasp visualization. But sometimes, I saw this myself, sometimes the very students who have difficulty grasping the legalistic analytical arguments, they're really great at visualizing.
and they gravitate to the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash and all of these different things. Now, sometimes Rebbeim don't appreciate those talents because Rebbeim tend to be the people that, how do you become a Rebbe? Because you're good in Gemara analysis, right? So you literally don't see the talents on the other side that actually exist. I read many years ago, and I really have not verified this, that the Maharal had a grandson or a great-grandson who was not especially gifted in Gemara learning. But he was a very good craftsman, a silversmith. He worked well with his hands. So the Maharal had him make scale models of the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, and in that way, he was able to understand many, many complicated sugyas because he was able to physically build the structure and visualize it and the like. So there are visual learners and there are auditory learners. Now, this is not dealing with midos so much, but this is also an aspect of Chanoch Lenar Al Pi Darko. People have different types of intelligences, different types of abilities. And therefore, our goal is not to change the apple into a tomato, but as the expression goes, let it be the best apple it can be, so to speak. Finally, I'll just end with one little horror before I get to another pasuk. Is, you know, many of you, of course, probably all of you knew of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zichrono Lebracha, great Talmud Chacham and Tzaddik that we lost a few months ago. And for many years he lived in Katamon, although he was Rosh Shiva of Gush Etzion, but he lived in Katamon. And in the Katamon Shtiblach, he was learning with one of his sons growing up. He also used to learn with his daughters quite a lot. And somebody went over to him in the Katamon Shtiblach, the famous Katamon Shtiblach, and said to him, you know, Rav Aaron, it's a wonderful thing that you make time to learn with your son in spite of your running a yeshiva. So he said, what do you mean make time to learn with my son? The mitzvah of the Torah is to learn with my son. I also make time to have a yeshiva. He says, the yeshiva is what I make time for, but the chiyuv is b'shinantam levanecha. And that's also a great bit of mussar, because sometimes we think, both for men and for women, we think chesed is what you do for people outside the family. The old English saying, charity begins at home, is actually quite true. And that is, v'yahavta l'reyecha kamocha starts with husband and wife. The kindness and making ourselves available starts with our spouses and with our children, and then we enlarge it to others. One does not look at chesed as only what you do with people outside the family. If anything, sometimes the chesed outside the family may be tainted with a certain gaiva, because it gets recognition and people know about it. The chesed you do within the family is often, you know, people don't know, people don't realize. So it counts for less because I'm not getting the recognition. But for that reason itself, it is even a greater chesed. Yeah.
Is there any, like, age at which point that, you know, a
Well, you know, it's interesting that when Rav Chaim Kanevsky used to visit his father, the Stipler, and Rav Chaim Kanevsky was already like 60 and the Stipler was 90, the Stipler used to say, we have to sit and learn because I still have to fulfill the mitzvah of the Shinantam of Anecha. Now, I wouldn't say that's a psak, but the basic idea is that a parent, has a chiyuv that their child should know all of the Tanakh and all of the Mishnah, which is the foundation of the oral law. So once you've taught your child the Tanakh and the Mishnah, you have fulfilled your obligation at that point. But again, given the fact that most kids don't know Tanakh or Mishnah, so in effect, it's almost a continuing obligation. Okay, so that was one thing I wanted to show you. Now I want to show you another very, very amazing thought from the Gra about Midos. And I will tell you, there's a little bit of a history here. I would sometimes say this thought at a Shabbaton, and I was attacked by a Lakewood person who denied that the Vilna Gaon could have said it, and I was wrong for saying it. So I don't say it anymore in a certain company. But you will see in a moment why it is so controversial and why a yeshiva person might take it in a very negative way. Although the Vilna Gaon is really the founder of the yeshiva world. And that is, all of us know the famous teaching of Chazal that Torah is compared to water. This is a famous, famous teaching of Chazal, and there are a million reasons why Torah is compared to water. Water goes from high ground to low ground. The Torah leaves the arrogant and goes to the humble. Water purifies and cleanses, and Torah purifies and cleanses. Water is necessary for biological life. Torah is necessary for spiritual life. All of that is true. But the Vilna Gaon says a startling insight why Torah is compared to water. The nature of water is whatever is in the ground when you pour the water will grow. If I pour water over ground that has seeds of wheat, I'll get wheat. If I have seeds of flowers, I will get flowers. If I have poisonous weeds, the water will cause the poisonous weeds to grow. Says the Vilna Gaon, Torah will accentuate and develop whatever character traits are already within your personality. If you are kind, generous, and humble, the Torah will make you kinder, more generous, and more humble. Well, that part is not controversial. But this part is what elicited a very, very harsh reaction. I literally do not, in certain groups, I do not say this word anymore. But don't tell anybody. The Vilna Gaon says, if chas v'shalom, a person is arrogant and cruel, the learning of Torah will make him more arrogant and more cruel, because it will just be another avenue of one-upmanship and competition, and give a person a sense of superiority and looking down at other people. And that is why Torah is compared, this is quite striking, Torah is compared to water, and that is why the Vilna Gaon says, again consistent with the first quote, that side by side with learning Torah, one must consciously try to improve their midos tovos, because otherwise the Torah can actually be a factor that contributes to their spiritual destruction. Now, once again, if this would have been said by the early Hasidic movements, one could understand this, because part of the early Hasidic movement was they were arguing against saying, oh, learning is the only thing that matters. This is the Vilna Gaon. As I said, the Vilna Gaon, learning was the only thing that mattered. I mean, the Vilna Gaon learnt 22 hours a day. And yet, the Vilna Gaon said, without tikkun hamidos, the Torah can make you worse than you were. And the truth, he brings a Gemara that Kimat says this explicitly. The Gemara describes Torah as a sum. A sum is a potion, something you drink. And it says, if you do it right, is a sam chayim, an elixir of life. If you do it wrong, it is a sam mavet. It is an elixir of death. Now the Gemara doesn't explain what does it mean to do it wrong. How does Torah become poison? But he's saying, with bad midos, the Torah can become poison. I mean, let me give you just a concrete example. Just sticks in my head. You may recall a few years ago, there was a whole quandary, because under the law of the Torah, a man is permitted to marry off his daughter from the time she's 3 years old until she's bas mitzvah. He could actually marry her off without her consent. So the story goes, there was a guy going through a difficult divorce proceeding with his wife. So he married off, I think she was 10, he married off his daughter and refused to reveal who the husband was. And the husband, you know, there was a conspiracy, until he got whatever concession he wanted. Now,
Here's a guy, you know, many people don't know this halacha, right? Here's a guy who knows this halacha because he learned Gemara Kedusha, and then he learned Be'ir, and then he learned all of these sugyas. Well, it would have been a lot better had he been ignorant. It would have been a lot better had he not learned this thing. He's using the Torah to destroy people. He's using the Torah to hurt people. He's not behaving this way in spite of the Torah. He's behaving this way because of the Torah. Because had he been an ignoramus, he couldn't have done the damage that he did. Right? So this is some of us. You're using the words of God to create hate, to create pain. Now, Lemaisa, the post can figure out different ways that the girl didn't have to worry, you know, etc. Okay, they said he's not believed to say that he did such a thing unless he produces the husband. But Lemaisa, if he produced the husband, the marriage might still be valid. But you have to be careful. Every year we get this shaila, mainly in co-educational schools, modern Orthodox schools, when kids learn about the Mishnah and Kedushin, you know, you give a woman a penny and you say a pruta. Hariyad Mekdeshesli, so every eighth grader kind of gives a penny to a girl and says, Hariyad Mekdeshesli in front of other classmates. So there's a shaila. Does she have to come in and cover her hair? Of course they don't, okay. In co-ed schools, they'll tend not to cover the hair anyway, but does she have to cover her hair? Does she have to need a get? You know, whatever it is. All sorts of questions about how do you deal with jokes and the like. It's not good to joke in matters like this. It could be sometimes very, very serious. So this is a very, very famous comment of the Gemara. Now I do want to point out, though, that it's very hard to identify a concrete, consistent thread here, because side by side with the Gemara that says that Torah without working on midot will actually make you a worse person, there are numerous passages in Mishlei where the Vilna Gaon writes that learning Torah is a mechanism to refine your personality. So you seem to have two opposite ideas. Is Torah going to make my midos worse? Or is it a way of refining? In fact, when I discussed with the guy in Lakewood, so I said, well, you know, I think we see that sometimes people learn Torah and they have very bad midos. So he said, yeah, but it would have been worse. Okay, his argument is that as bad as a person is, he's better with the Torah than not. But the Vilna Gaon says not. On the other hand, other places the Vilna Gaon says Torah does improve midos. Now there's also a passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi. And the Talmud Yerushalmi says, it puts words in God's mouth, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu said, Halavai osi azvu v'torasi shamaru. Halavai, if only they would reject me and still learn my Torah. Shahama'ar Sheba, the light in the Torah, Machziram Lemutav, will bring them back to me. So I just want to point out that when Rabbi Saul Salanter started the Musar movement, and this was around 1850, this is after the death of the Vilna Gaon, around 1850, there was a lot of machlokas among Gedolim. They didn't like this idea of spending. I mean, people weren't against improving midos. That was always a good thing. But they were against, you know, spending a lot of time on it, having programs, having group therapy sessions, you know, musar vadim. Because they said, Torah alone will refine your character. And this was a big machlokas. You know, the musar movement is called Tenuat HaMusar. And the definitive history of the musar movement is a four-volume work by Rav Dov Katz called Tenuas HaMusar. It has the biographies, Rav Zal Salanter, and all of the great Talmidim. But there was a fifth volume that he published separately. He didn't want it to be part of the main set. And this is called Pulmas HaMusar. Pulmas HaMusar means the fight against Musar. And he didn't want to make it part of the set because there was a lot of possible Lashon Hara there. So when I was a Bachur in Eretz Yisrael, that was the volume we all wanted to look for, because we had heard there was this volume about all of the fights that were going on. And, you know, eventually we unearthed it one way or the other. And the Pulmas HaMusar was sometimes quite vehement. Sometimes there was violence, people were beaten up. You know, as if to say, we don't want Musar, our midos are good enough. And to show you that, we're going to beat you up, you know. It's kind of that very response It's like when the Pope denounces Islam as violent. So they stage a violent protest to protest being called violent. Okay. I mean, that kind of proves what it is. But be it as it may, the machlokas was that many gedolim did take the position that Torah learning alone is going to make you a better person. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and the Chafetz Chaim later said no. Torah, they gave a different mashal, but it fits what the Vilna Gaon is saying. Torah is the nutrition for a healthy person. When you're a healthy person, Limud HaTorah will strengthen you and give you nutrition and feed your soul. But when you're a sick person, that food can destroy you. You need to have medicine and a special diet. So when there's sickness of the soul, the ordinary diet doesn't work. But Brisk, for example, Rav Chaim of Brisk was not in favor of a Musar movement at the time, and to this very day, Briskers have a certain histaigut, a certain reluctance to engage in systematic Musar study and the like. But all I want to say is that, once again, I think you see that Rabbi Saul Salanter has a direct connection to the teaching of the Vilna Gaon in Mishlei, that you need to consciously work on Musar, and the Limud HaTorah itself is not going to help you. Now, let me point out, though, that Musar itself, as Rabbi Saul Salanter developed, had two components. Actually, maybe three components. There are three components in what does it mean to study Musar. One is actually a very intellectual component. In other words, a lot of it is Torah learning. You study Midrashim, you study Ma'amarei Chazal, you study Halachos of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. How do you treat your business, in business ethics, right? So you are studying. There are mamish portions of Limud HaTorah and Halacha that are Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. So you don't look at, there's Musar and there's Torah study. No, a lot of Musar is direct Limud HaTorah itself. That's one component. Nobody could be against that because that's like you're learning Bava Metzia, you're learning Gemara, you're learning Rambam. The second component was a bit more controversial, and that was the internal psychoanalytical part of Musar, in which you would try to understand and spend a lot of time unraveling your personality. So you would understand, why do I get angry? Why do I feel a certain way? There would be this constant monitoring of your thoughts. The Chazon Ish and Rav Chaim, they felt that was a little obsessive. You're getting too involved in thinking about yourself so much. But certainly there's no doubt that Musar was highly introspective, and sometimes that would be done through a vad, even today, right? A vad of Musar, where people try to unravel their personalities to understand. I want to get to the bottom of it. The theory being, when you understand what makes you tick, you're able to control it. So that's not directly learning Torah, that's about more learning yourself. Looking at yourself. Yeah. The Chazon Ish thought it was not always healthy. The Chazon Ish thought that getting too involved in analyzing yourself could create, number one, a certain depression in which no matter what you do, you'll always find something wrong with yourself. And number two, it took away from the simcha of Avodas Hashem. Meaning, if you daven shachris, you shouldn't be asking yourself, was I l'shem shamayim? In other words, if you delve into yourself too much, you go a little crazy. On the other hand, the Chazon Ish, who was against the Musar movement, once said, I'm against the Musar movement, but I'm against the opponents of the Musar movement even more. Because the Baalei Musar were yirei shamayim, and they were tzaddikim, and some of the opponents were behaving with a lack of derech eretz, and a lack of kavod, and a lack of midas. And the Chazon Ish was not in favor of bad midas. He just felt that the internal psychoanalytical aspect of Musar for certain personalities could be dangerous. And the third, so these first two categories are what we'll call the intellectual component of Musar. One is the Chazal, the learning, and the other is the self-introspection. And then there was a third component Rabbi Yisrael Salanter advocated, and this was Musar bihispalut,
hispalus, which is musr with emotional arousal. That's where you would take a maimer chazal, like a mantra, and you would just repeat it 100 times or 200 times or 500 times. In other words, da mit lifnei miata ome, da lifnei miata, just say it 100 times. The theory being that even if things are in your head, they don't penetrate your heart unless you spend a lot of time over and over and over and over and over again. This is very similar in Hasidus, what Breslov has in his Bodidus, etc. So Musser had a very similar exercise. This is called Musser Behispilus, Musser with emotional arousal. These are the three components of Rabbi Yisrael's plan. And as I say, the second and the third were the sources of the great controversy and the like. Rav Chaim was not in favor of it so much. The Chazon Ish was not in favor of it so much. But once again, you know, it's not for us to decide these matters. But all I'm saying is that the Musar movement is very much miyusad on the teachings of the Gra in Mishlei. Yeah. Okay. So that's a very good point. Yeah. The question was there were certain people practices where people would roll in the snow, or they would lie down on nails, or sleep in a coffin. Do you remember the Day of Death? Yes, that is a much older phenomenon. That actually goes back to the Middle Ages. Before there was the Baal Shem Tov, there was a group of very, very pious people that were called Chassidei Ashkenaz, the pious ones of Germany, Rav Yehuda HaChassid and the like, and they did advocate as part of the tshuva process that one should go through physical sufferings in this world, and one should actually put the sufferings on themselves. But that got out of fashion, so to speak, and Rav Yisrael Salanter was not advocating that. Rav Yisrael Salanter is in the 1800s, and by that time they were not doing that anymore, and that was very much discouraged. But what you're talking about are things that only some people did in the 1200s, much, much earlier. Chassidei Ashkenaz, yeah. I'm sorry. No. No. Those Hasidim are way before. The Baal Shem Tov Hasidim are from the 1700s. These are earlier Hasidim, way before the Baal Shem Tov. Yeah.
Rabbi Salanter was the 1850s, and
Okay.
Where did one end?
I'll give you a little history. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter died around, I have to get the exact number, around 1890s.
Okay.
Rabbi Yisrael Salanter had many, many disciples. Among his disciples was Rav Simcha Zissel of Kelim, and Rav Dessler was a disciple of Rav Simcha Zissel of Kelim, strive for truth. And so the Bali Musar continued. Now the truth is, the Musar movement today is only a pale reflection of what it was. It really is not the same as it was. In fact, now when you look at Musar today, you say, what's the big fuss? Why was Rav Chaim going, you know? No, you have to know, Musar at one point was people would spend hours a day in character. Now it got parav. Now it's not a big deal. In most yeshivas, if there's a Musar Seder, it's 15 minutes a day. You know, no one's going to fight over that. But you have to understand, it was much more intense, much more deep than it was. So in many ways, you could actually say, although the Torah world gives lip service to Musar, in fact, to a large degree, the opponents of Musar have won, in the sense that it does not, in most circles, it does not have the prominence that it had. Again, there are exceptions. There are certainly exceptions. But in the mainstream yeshiva, Musar is not as big a deal as Rav Yisrael Salanter envisioned it to be. Yeah.
But I feel, unless I'm misinterpreting what Musar is, which is a reflection of improving your Mido,
yep,
people live it today, more so. The kids are going to Hast and Simcha and doing Chesed in hospitals and old age homes. They don't need to learn it. They're
okay. It could be, you know, again, yesh v'yesh, meaning to say, you're pointing out, Baruch Hashem, it's good to see the positives. You're pointing out positive manifestations. Unfortunately, maybe I'm more cynical, there are also a lot of negative manifestations. So, you know, you're right. And Zel Yumaseh, sometimes along with
a rise and an improvement, there can be weakening in other areas. Okay, so next week I'll hopefully start Parak Aleph, but I also still have more introductory comments about this.